And with Walter Assey of Renovco today, I'm Trudy Mason, the Home Improvement Show. This is your chance to find out all about home renos, what you can do yourself, what you and your buddies may be able to do if you want to have a work party with pizza and beer after, or maybe some of the jobs that are best left to the professionals. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, great to be working with you.
It is likewise.
I'll start off. First of all, folks, 514-790-0800. If you want to submit your questions or give us a call, please feel free. I want to ask you about something that we've been keeping an eye on in our basement, Walter. Mm-hmm. A lot of people struggle with foundation cracks, and we caught one fairly early a number of years ago, and we got it filled from the inside. You know, they come and they squirt that expandable stuff, and we haven't had any problem with any water infiltration since. It's all been fine. Does that stuff that they squirt in, does that last a long time, or is this something that needs yearly monitoring?
That's a great question. So typically we do it from the inside when the outside is, you know, more complicated to do because you have a lot of landscaping or pavers or anything like that. Depending on the size of the crack, one would be the size of the crack. The second thing would be the ratio of success usually from the inside is about 90%. So 90% of the time you won't have any problems. The outside is really the best way to go. I mean, typically when you do it, and you can do it also from the inside and the outside, by the way. From the outside, the reason being is when they dig down and they fill up the crack, they also will install a delta membrane. And that kind of ensures, so even if the crack or the injection fails, because of the delta membrane, the likelihood of water infiltration is very minute.
Oh, okay. So I guess one way is a little bit more secure than the other. My other question about that is, you know, that the expandable stuff, it kind of, it's, or the filler that they put into the crack, it doesn't sit entirely flat to the concrete wall. Mm-hmm. Is there any danger to kind of chipping it off? If you want a drywall on top, for example, is there any danger to chipping off what's overflowed out of the crack?
No. None whatsoever. What it is expansible. It's a urethane injection, so it's made more for flexibility. In the old days, we used to do epoxy injections. We don't do that anymore because the epoxy cement is stronger than the cement of the foundation. So it was then figured out that that causes other cracks next to it. Mm. So it was not a great product. So now the urethane and the flexibility of the urethane, what's really important is what goes into the crack, what just comes out from the inside to the outside. You can just clean it and you're good to go.
Your home improvement questions with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. And it looks as though, like me, Anna is thinking about her basement. Hello, Anna.
Yes, good morning.
Hi. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, I've had some flooding in the garage, and I'm trying to find a product that I can waterproof a cement wall in the garage. And I'm wondering if there's a paint or another kind of product that would do this. And that's I can apply it easily.
Walter?
So when you say a garage wall, can you elaborate? Is it a foundation wall? Is it a downslope garage?
It's a downslope garage. Mm-hmm. And so one of the walls, on the other side, I have a bedroom. And I'm trying to waterproof that wall so in case there is any water into the garage that maybe it will minimize the flow across the membrane from the wall into the bedroom.
Okay, so I understand it's an interior wall.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and that wall is made out of what? Is it cement, cinder blocks, concrete?
Yes, it's a cement, yeah. It's an old, I just see like one wall cement and there's little cracks here and there.
Okay, I mean, there's a lot to do if you want to membrane that. I wouldn't call it sealer, but I mean, you could put a liquid elastomeric membrane. So it's the same type of membrane that we put on foundations when we are waterproofing them before we put the delta membrane. Elastomeric membrane. Yeah. Okay. So, and what that you can apply with a ruler. So, it will kind of seal the cinder blocks in case you have any water infiltration. It will impede it from protruding through the cinder blocks because the cinder blocks are porous. So, if you have enough water in there, it might protrude through for sure. So, I mean, I would definitely go with an elastomeric membrane.
Okay. And I can purchase that at any Home Depot or any anywhere?
All the big box store. I mean, I Patrick Morin, BMR, Home Hardware. So, you know, a lot of the Canadian big box stores carry these.
Thanks for your call, Anna. Hope that answers it. Let's go now to Alice. Hi, Alice. You're on with Walter Assey.
Good morning, Walter. First of all, I want to say how much I enjoy your weekly show, and I want to thank you for all the new sophisticated words I learn about construction. So I have a rather simple question. We're planning to buy a window air conditioner. My husband wants to install it in one window where it will not lead an extension. It will not need an extension cord. Mm-hmm. I want to, and I go, no, it will block a beautiful view. It has to go in this window. And he says, well, we'll need an extension cord. Call Walter to make sure you get a safe one. So
there you go, Walter. What's your recommendation?
So you want to, I mean, extension cords in general, you have the heavy gauge. It's not really, I mean, it's an internal, I worry more about the extension cord when it is more exterior than interior. So the heavy gauge ones are usually the best ones to get. But my question to you is, why are you opting for a window mounted air conditioner in general?
Just because the portable air conditioners we've looked at casually take up a lot of space.
Okay.
And there's one we might be able to fit underneath a counter, but then the extension for the air would have to go across the stove. So, not a good idea.
No, not the greatest of ideas for sure.
The aisle in the kitchen really isn't wide enough to put in a portable air conditioner, I don't think.
Do you live in an apartment or a home?
An apartment.
An apartment. Okay, so that explains.
Because there are wall mounts now that you can put in that just go on the wall, right?
Correct. I mean, these are the split units, but she lives in an apartment, so I mean, it's a permanent installation, and I kind of get what you know. You're probably renting, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's why. So yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, any heavy gauge extension cord is not an issue. There's no issue there.
Right, and in order to block the rain, because we do live in a rather windy spot.
Mm-hmm.
Is the plexiglass or our windows slide sideways? So we're going to need something above the air conditioner. And I believe there's just two options, like plexiglass or one other thing that you can just use to tape.
So the plexiglass would be the most common to use. Completely impermeable, so you're not going to have a problem with it. The more important part is how you kind of put it in place and seal it in place that it does not leak around it. But as a product, there's nothing wrong with it. It's great. If you live in a windy place, it's not the plexiglass a problem. It's how you're going to fix the plexiglass to the frame.
Thanks very much for your call, Alice. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey of Renovco. your home improvement expert, Walter Assey, president of Renovco. I'm Trudy Mason, pushing the buttons for Walter today. Your questions at 514-790-0800. And we go to Tony on the line with a question about a sump pump. Hi, Tony.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Just fine. You go ahead with your question.
Okay, great. Well, I have a detached home in Southwest Montreal, which was probably built in the late 40s, early 50s. So, but it's the basement's not finished, so the cement walls are open, the cement floor, and we get a dampness coming from the cement underneath the house. Like it keeps the cement stays wet. And we tried putting like a paint over it, like a waterproof paint, but it just seems to, but it's not water. It's not like a puddle. It just stays damp. And we do have a sub pump about 15 feet away, which works fine, but doesn't fill up. So it's not like a lot of water coming underneath the house. And we don't know where it's coming from.
Walter?
Okay, so you said it's a 40s construction, right?
Most likely, late 40s, early 50s. Mind you, it's poured foundation, so, you know.
Okay. Have you looked at the thickness of the slab in the basement? Have you measured it? Is there a way to measure it?
It's funny you say that. I was told by someone that that could be the issue, a thin slab on the floor.
Well,
so is that what you're trying to say?
It's a very typical thing to do in the 40s and a good part of the 50s. The slab, the basements were, I mean, originally when these basements were built, I think they had a wiser notion than we have today. They were not really meant to be finished spaces. They were more like an extra storage space, a place where you could put your mechanicals, your furnace, this and that. So they did not spend a lot of money finishing it. Now, part of the things that they did, not adequately would be the cement slab. So a lot of the cement slabs that were poured at maybe 2 inches, 3 inches max worth of slab, a cement slab, which is nearly not enough to stop the humidity coming from the earth underneath, right? So what you're seeing, that dampness that you're seeing, is really humidity. It's the soil underneath that remains wet. It's not enough. You don't have enough thickness in the concrete to stop it. And more importantly, in those years, they did not have a geotextile technology. So they would, you know, there was nothing really, or a vapor barrier to stop the humidity from rising. So what you're seeing now really is a humidity that is building up underneath and it's kind of protruding through the cement itself.
What's the solution then, Walter?
So, I mean, look, there's a solution for the generalized area. There's not much in the sense besides you aggressively dehumidifying the basement, because you don't want the ambient air itself to become very humid. When that happens and we achieve relative humidity above 60%, then just the humidity in the air will create mold spores, which is what typically you're smelling. That dampness or that musty smell is due to the formation of mold due to high humidity. So you don't want that. It's not good for the breathing. It's not good for the air quality, and it's not good for the materials. So by aggressively dehumidifying the ambient air, you're going to get rid of that excess humidity that is in the ambient air, which is what you really want. As far as the slab itself, you can put some type of a vapor barrier on the slab. So if you don't want to spend a lot of money, a 6 millimeter vapor barrier would do the trick. It will be slippery though, so you might want to cover it with some type of flooring after that, just to make sure that, you know, you don't slip.
What could you use as the the covering then, if you're putting a covering?
Well, I mean, you want to use anything that is not going to work with the humidity. So vinyl lats are great because they don't expand or contract with the humidity. They don't rot. They don't they won't show wear. You can also put linoleum. It's just, you know, less of it's more problematic if you want to fix it. The other thing you could put as a vapor barrier, but it is more expensive, would be also the corrugated membrane. It looks like an egg carton. It's like it has bubbles in it. So yeah, that's another type that you could use. Only problem is, again, would be cost for you. But there's no other, if you want to go more intrusive, then you're going to have to jackhammer the slab and re-pour it properly 5 inches with a geotextile. The third option would be to kind of pour more concrete on top of the existing concrete as well. But it is also, if you're going to go to that route, might as well just put a new
I'll slab. Lose height in my basement. It's also, it's probably 6 feet as it is. So I don't want to lose much height. I think the insulation and maybe a vinyl tile, not too thick, I guess will be the best option for now.
Two things, they have to go hand in hand. Aggressive dehumidification, that's very important, and a vapor barrier of some kind on the slab itself. Okay?
Right.
Now, the other thing I want to just kind of, not to confuse you, but to kind of maybe highlight as well, is the depths of and location of your sump pump. It's great that we have a sump pump. It does take away a lot of the water that's coming around the house and underneath. But sometimes the pit is simply not deep enough, especially if we have a very high water table in your area. So I would look into that with a plumber, and sometimes even the location of the pit makes a difference.
Thanks. Great. That's great. Thank you so much for the information.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
For your call. Thanks very much, Tony. Is that a doable home handyman job, putting down the vapor barrier and putting some vinyl flooring over top of it?
The vapor barrier is simple. It's anybody could really do it. The vinyl flooring, you have to be a bit handy. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science, but if you haven't installed the floor before, it's tricky. The very tricky thing with vinyl lats, it really needs a level floor. If your floor is not level, it's going to separate in no time. It doesn't forgive like a floating floor would.
Oh, okay. That's your pro tip from Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Your questions for the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. Your home improvement expert here to answer your questions, Walter Assey, president of Renovco, 514-790-0800. You can use that number to call or to text. And we have John on the line with a question for you, Walter, about windows. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
How are you?
Just fine.
I'm going to shut down the lower the radio. Sorry. I'm calling... I just had windows replaced, and I just wanted to know if when they opened up the old windows, on two of them they found like a little bit of water damage. They took out the top, like 2x6, that was like a support there, and on two of them there was just a little bit of water damage on the piece going up, the 2x6 or 2x4. Is that acceptable, like not to pull that out? If it's just like, I even throw some mold remedy on it.
What do you think, Walter?
So, the key with the water damage on 2x4, if it's water staining and the wood looks still clean and good shape, then you don't have an issue. Where it becomes more of an issue is if you start seeing wood rot. So if there's any advanced rot on the 2x4 that you see that it's been almost eaten up, then I would have an issue with that.
Okay, so that was on two of the windows. It was more mild. On one of the, like a big window, like maybe 7 feet wide, when they opened up that one, the 2x6, the top one supporting, definitely we changed it. And then there was like maybe four pieces of 2x6, but cut like a 12-inch, and then there's another 2x6 underneath. But he says that goes down to like the bottom of the house. He says to take that all out, you have to take off the bricks and everything. So he cleaned up where there was some rot, and he replaced the, like I said, those 12-inch pieces of 2x6 and the top one. And he says it should be fine. He goes, but there's never going to be any water going in there again with the new windows.
Walter?
Does that make sense, Walter?
What we do typically, because the where I would really kind of want to highlight the issue is two things. One is the exterior walls are supporting walls, so any component that is rotten have a load bearing properties. So if let's say for some crazy reason that cannot be taken out because it's rotted. Well, what was done to support it, to reinforce that area? Because right now that piece of wood that is supporting is rotted, and you know it, what happens with that weight that is on top of it. So that's one thing that I would like to maybe clarify with you. Would you know if they reinforced it, doubled it up, or did anything like that?
No, like I said, the top 2x6, they replaced it. They actually put two of them as opposed to one.
That's fine.
And there was like about four reinforcements that they were put like standing up between the 2x6 on the top and the one that's lower.
Okay.
Those 12-inch posts, they changed. But the 2x6 that was down below, he says that if you start going into that, you have to take apart the whole front of the home, take off the bricks and everything. He says that's going all the way down to your basement. It's part of the foundation or whatever. So he took out whatever that was rot over there, and he says it should be fine because... So okay. That's my question. Is like, so, is that still safe? Like,
well, I mean, I want to just dig in a bit deeper, if you don't mind, because... Is this on the main floor or is
yeah,
on the second floor?
Yeah, it's on the front of the house.
Front like of the house, but the first floor, right?
The first floor, like about 3 feet, 3 feet
from the foundation.
From the bottom of the from the ground.
Okay, so what I'm worried about is what you're referring to is the rim joist of the home.
Okay.
And if that's the case, that's very structural. So to answer you properly, we need to kind of understand the level of rot at the rim joist. Your window installer is partially right. It is complicated to get to a rim joist to fix. So yes, he is right that the bricks would have to come out and have to be fixed from the inside out. But if it is advanced rot, the rim joist is essentially what your home is sitting on. That's what that is the belt, the framing, if you wish, that you build around the foundation so you could put the walls up. So it's a very important component of the structure of the home. You know, to answer you properly, we would see the level of rot that is there and what the span is as well. Okay.
Well, we took, like I said, there was you know a bit of the wood that was rotten, that we cleaned it all up, and we threw some of that mold stuff, we threw that stuff for insects and everything, just to cover all bases. And like
would it require Walter now reopening the opening the front of the house to check? Is that well, that's what? Thanks very much for your call, by the way, John.
So I mean, it's very hard to determine. I mean, the fact that we don't have pictures or see it visually, it's very hard to say. And the reason I'm a bit more reticent is because it's a rim joist. So there's a lot of weight on the rim joist itself. What you could do is I mean, what John could do is maybe send me a few pictures. I hope he has taken a few pictures, and that way I can assess. I look more on what is sitting on that and how much of it have rotted. So if it's like, I don't know, let's say 5% of the total span that's been rotted out and that's been cut off and cleaned and encapsulated, I could maybe live with that. But if I see it's more advanced than that, then I would have a problem leaving it behind. I mean, the only good news for him is he could do it as phase two. So if it's really an issue, and we see that it's an issue, it's not going to so much interfere with his window installation that he already did. So it could be done as a secondary job need be.
Well, that's a happy aspect of that. We have a question in from Aunt Maggie saying that she had her bathroom redone and now the grout is turning red and she needs to know how to clean it nicely, properly.
What color did we start with in the grass?
I'm assuming it was white. Let's go with white.
Yeah, I mean, red is a weird color to turn to if it started with the white. So I'll be very curious to know why it's turning red. The reason I'm saying this is, if I don't know if you can follow up with a call or another text, what part of the bathroom is this grout in that's turning red? Is it where we have a water wall? So it's inside the shower, or it's just in an area where it's typically dry? The reason I'm asking this is the discoloration of grout in a water area might also mean that there's seepage and there are wet material behind the tiles.
Oh, that would be worrisome.
So that's why before I answer this, I'd like to maybe understand a bit more where in the bathroom this is located. I mean, there are a lot of good grout cleaners out there. If the bathroom is recently renovated and she have applied pre-sealed grout, there's not supposed to be a fast discoloration like this. That's why there's some red flags that are being raised right now that I'd like to dig a bit deeper before I answer that. But I mean, what she could do is she could use even Tilex or these types of cleaners. And then if the grout discolors again, then there's more deeper investigation to do.
Okay. What about bleach? Will bleach work?
Bleach would work. I mean, the only thing I don't like about bleach is the fumes, but it does work.
Your home improvement expert, Walter Assey, answering your questions, 514-790-0800 to call or text. With your home improvement expert, Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Final thought about cleaning grout, Walter?
Before the break, we talked about the possibility of using bleach on it. The more I'm thinking about it, the less exciting that seems to be. Because the probability of the grout turning red is probably a type of a mold called Serrius markensis, which is a red type of a mold species. And using bleach aggravates mold. So there is really, you know, I know there are some people that really like to use bleach on everything, but that's really not a good idea. And if so, and in her case, because there's a high risk that this is a mold, I would want her more to use a homemade remedy that have no chemicals in it that could aggravate or create mycotoxins in the process, right? So a mix of white vinegar, a peroxide, and a baking soda. You mix them together, and then you could apply them with a toothbrush and let it sit for about 10 to 15 minutes on the affected areas. That's a dwell time for it to work. And then you kind of clean it thoroughly with warm water after the dwell time. But what's really the key after that is to dry it very quickly. Because, again, if it is mold-related, you don't want the wetness to stay there a long time.
So you'd want to put a fan on it or something?
No fan.
Directing on?
no fan, just dry it with a dry cloth. Because if you put a fan, anything that is mechanically blown and there are spores, you might make those spores fly somewhere else in the home. So the idea is you use a towel, a dry rag, and you dry it thoroughly. If the staining comes back, then it's definitely, or the probability of it being mold is extremely high.
And when you talk about white vinegar peroxide and baking soda, what are the proportions for that?
I mean, it's really the peroxide is 3% the concentration to begin with. So it's a teaspoon of each, really. It's just to kind of create this type of a paste. That's what you want to see as a consistency, just a paste.
And apply it with an old toothbrush.
Yeah, old toothbrush would work.
Okay. We have a question now from Rebecca about air conditioning. Hi, Rebecca. You're on the air with Walter Assey.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My outside unit doesn't seem to be working. The fan is not going around. The inside is working, but not the outside. I was wondering if I should just call the company right away, or is there anything I can look at before that?
So when you say the inside, do you mean the furnace?
Yes, the furnace is working.
Okay, so when you put your hand on the vent, there is air coming out, but it's not cold air.
Well, it's somewhat cool, but it's not super cool. And
when was the last time you changed your filter?
They're electronic filters, so I just I went and quickly cleaned them yesterday, but
okay. Do me a favor before you call an electrician. Take them completely out for about an hour or so and tell me if there's any improvement. The reason I'm saying this is because if the electronic filter is not functioning properly or it's clogged or haven't been cleaned in a while, that could happen that, you know, it's an automatic shut off when there's an air pressure issue.
Okay.
So before we do that. Second thing, if that doesn't work, I mean, how old is your heat pump?
It's 30 years old.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. So there's a very high probability it's a compressor. Hopefully it's not that, because, I mean, the only good news is if you really have to change it, do not just change the compressor, because that's going to cost you an arm and a leg. In this case, look into putting a new one. A 30-year-old heat pump is not efficient anymore. It used to be in the old days, but now it goes up to minus 35. And it's probably going to be prone to more and more problems. Plus, you're going to have issues finding the freon gas in it. So there's going to be all of these compounded issues that just tell me if the compressor is fried, just look into something else. But before we actually write it off, just try removing the filter.
Okay.
Put it back on again. I mean, I always like paper filters personally, but take it out completely just to kind of help the airflow and see if that happens. The only thing that, you know, it's kind of helping your case here to kind of look into that is the fact that there's a bit of cold in the air. So that's telling me more. It could be an air pressure issue.
Thank you for your call, Rebecca. I have a question about something I saw a guy doing in our neighborhood yesterday, rolling onto his driveway that black, I guess it's a tar compound or something like that.
Asphalt sealer?
Yeah, asphalt sealer. And he was rolling it on just with a, you know, like it looked like a paint roller at the end of a long stick, like you would use for your ceilings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And is that a worthwhile investment on a driveway?
I mean, it is a worthwhile investment if your driveway is starting to develop cracks. If not, then it's not really as important. What that does, it kind of seals the cracks in place, so we ensure that there's no water that could leak in the winter and then freeze and then expand, the ice expand, and then the cracks becoming bigger and bigger. So it's really more about the condition of the driveway than the necessity of it at the beginning.
Of course, the door-to-door salespeople will try to tell you everybody's driveway needs a coat of that stuff.
Anything that is door-to-door, I'll look at twice and then analyze and then look twice again. So it's
gotcha. This texter says, we have a 1950s house with unfinished basement. We also want to renovate the kitchen and potentially add an extension on the second floor. How do we determine feasibility and order or of the renovations?
That seems like a tall order. So the feasibility is more the globalized budget. So basically, we look at what, you know, that person's budget is, and to see if it's if it goes well within the boundaries of that budget. That's really how I would determine that first and foremost. It's not like the order of things, but when it's a big project, we have to see if the homeowner does have the budget for it, and then we can see what the stages should be, A, B, and C. But I mean, in a lot of cases, when you're phasing it out, what needs to be done is a master plan in any which case, because the master plan will put a roadmap and everybody could follow, contractor A, B, and C, or the same contractor if you're doing it over many years, the project.
This texter says, exceptionally this year, I cleaned the intake fins around my outdoor air conditioning unit, which are constantly clogged with pollen. Mm-hmm. Maybe that could help. Are those on the, where are those exterior fins out on the outdoor AC unit?
So it's really whatever is, I mean, when you go out to the heat pump, it's really those coils that you see, they're visible. And that's a good point. This year, there was a lot of pollen for some reason, and a lot of heat pumps had to be cleaned because of that.
Oh, okay. Is that something you can do yourself?
Oh, 100%.
What are you, just a rag?
Vacuum cleaner, a rag, a shop vac, a dry rag. And they come off easy as well.
Walter Assey, thanks very much for sharing your expertise.
Always a pleasure, truly.
The Home Improvement Show featuring Walter Assey, president of Renovco.